three. Krama ahai. By steps. Asantushtaha. One who is dissatisfied. Advipena. By a complete island. Api. Although. Napuryate. Cannot be satisfied. Navavarsha sametena. Even by possessing nine varshas. Saptadvipavara ichya. By the desire to take possession of seven islands. So translation. If I were not satisfied with three paces of land, then surely I would not be satisfied even with possessing one of the seven islands consisting of nine varshas. Even if I possess one island, I would hope to get others. You can repeat. If I were not satisfied with three paces of land, then surely I would not be satisfied even with possessing one of the seven islands consisting of nine varshas. Even if I possess one island, I would hope to get others. So there's no purport to this text, nor the next text, but the third text has a purport. So we'll keep reading. Text 23. Saptadvipa vipattihu nipa vainya gayadayaha aritai kamar gatanantam trishnaya itina shutam. We've heard that although powerful kings like Maharashtrapati and Maharaj Gaya achieve proprietorship over the seven dvipas, they cannot achieve satisfaction or find the end of their ambitions. Wow. Text 24. Yadrityopapanena santushto vartate sukham na santushtas tribir lokair ajitatmo pasaditahai. One should be satisfied with whatever he achieves by his previous destiny. For discontent can never bring happiness. A person who is not self-controlled will not be happy even with possessing the three worlds. So, purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki. If happiness is the ultimate goal of life, one must be satisfied with the position in which he is placed by providence. This instruction is also given by Prahlad Maharaj. Sukham andriyakam daicha deha yogena dehinam sarvatra lavate daivad yatadukam ayatnataha. My dear friends, born of demoniac families, the happiness perceived with reference to the sense objects by contact with the body can be obtained in any form of life according to one's past fruitive activities. Such happiness is automatically obtained without endeavor, just as we obtain distress. That's from the Bhagavatam, 7th Canto, 6th Chapter, Text 3. This philosophy is perfect in regard to obtaining happiness. Real happiness is described in the Bhagavad Gita in the 6th chapter, text 21. Sukham atyantikam yattha purigrayam matendriyam vedyatra na chayvayam stitas chalati tatvataha. So many devotees on my body from these nice garlands. There's more devotees here than they're sitting down. In the spiritually joyous state, one is situated in boundless transcendental happiness and enjoys himself through transcendental senses. Established thus, one never departs from the truth. one has to perceive happiness by the super senses. Wow, that's interesting. The super senses are not the senses of the material elements. Every one of us is a spiritual being, aham brahmasmi, and every one of us is an individual person. Our senses are now covered by material elements. And because of ignorance, we consider the material senses that cover us to be our real senses. The real senses, however, are within the material covering. Dehino smin yata dehe. Within the covering of the material elements are the spiritual senses, sarvopati, vinirmuktam tatpadatvena, nirmalam. When the spiritual senses are uncovered, by these senses we can be happy. Satisfaction of the spiritual senses is thus described. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhaktir Uchate. When the senses are engaged in devotional service to Rishikesha, then the senses are completely satisfied. Without this superior knowledge of sense gratification, one may try to satisfy his material senses, but happiness will never be possible. One may increase his ambition for sense gratification and even achieve what he desires for the gratification of his senses, but because this is on a material platform, he will never achieve satisfaction and contentment. According to Brahminical culture, one should be content with whatever he obtains without special endeavor and should cultivate spiritual consciousness. Then he will be happy. The purpose of the Krishna Conscious Movement is to spread this understanding. People who do not have scientific spiritual knowledge mistakenly think that the members of the Krishna Conscious Movement are escapists, trying to avoid material activities. In fact, however, we are engaged in real activities for obtaining the ultimate happiness in life. If one is not trained to satisfy the spiritual senses and continues in material sense gratification, he will never obtain happiness that is eternal and blissful. Srimad Bhagavatam in the 5th canto, 5th chapter, text 1, therefore recommends. Tapo divyam putra kiyena shukvam shuyed yasmat prashokyam tunantam. One must practice austerity so that his existential position will be purified and he will achieve unlimited blissful life. So, Om Gana Timirandasha Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmiritam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. So, how does one understand that, you know, this is my quota? How does one understand that I should acquire more? Because sometimes it is required, or we do need to acquire more material conveniences or comforts just in order to proceed in Krishna consciousness. So we have to actually analyze to see that what we want is actually what we need. There's a difference between wants and needs. You know, we do have basic needs, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur points this out in the Chaitanya Shikshamrita. You know, you have a need for air, food, light, you know, all the hierarchy of needs that's mentioned by this psychologist Maslow. And we have a need for fresh air. It's like I was remarking or thinking yesterday, they were burning this pile across the street of wood. And I was joking. I said, I have a need for fresh air. You know, someone can say, hey, you're in Maya, because you have a need for fresh air, because you don't like us burning the wood, which is Krishna's service. But, you know, we have to be aware of this. And even when I go to Govardhan, I have an air purifier there. It purifies the air because, you know, sometimes the air, they're harvesting different things. And especially when I harvest the wheat, you know, all these little particles of wheat get in the air and they start choking. So, anyway, so we have to be aware of our basic needs. And also we have to be aware of what constitutes over-endeavor. Just like we have this, you know, Ajahara, Prayasas, Japa, Japa, Niyamagra. A very important verse to understand in regard to the instructions and these verses here in the Bhagavatam. Atyahara. That means overeating, overcollecting, and then it's very much connected with prayasas, or over-endeavoring. So how do we know when we're over-endeavoring? That's another point. We can know when we're over-endeavoring when our spiritual activities reduce to such an extent that they become secondary in our lives. And it, you know, the typical story I tell in that regard is, I don't know if I should tell the story again, but because you've all heard it a million times before, is the Brahmin in his underwear. This Brahmin, he was engaged in spiritual activities, and it wasn't his quota to have underwear that didn't have holes in it. It just wasn't his quota. Because, basically, and I said I'm not going to tell the whole story, because that, you know, he went to this whole endeavor with a cat, and the mouse was eating the underwear, obviously, with a cat, and the cow, and then the wife, and the job, and he had no time left to chant his rounds every day. Poor guy. So we should see, you know, what we can acquire for ourselves easily without over-endeavor. And that's our quota. I mean, we may have to work a job, but still the sadhana should be there. If the sadhana is threatened, then that's over-endeavor. That's the point. It's not that one shouldn't work. We're not advocating that people don't go to work, don't work 8 hours a day, but there's so many hours in the day for sadhana. But if you're working day duty, night duty, you know, three jobs to pay a mortgage, that's over-endeavor. And you don't get to enjoy your house, you get to enjoy your workplace. That's interesting. Anyway, so one should analyze these things. And also, as far as sense gratification, Krishna talks about in the Bhagavad Gita, I mean, not just the Bhagavad Gita, in the second chapter, how if one is able to conquer his senses, he can actually be peaceful. Yeah, there's a, let's see, what is it, six. Second chapter, text 64. But a person free from all attachment and aversion and able to control his senses through regulated principles of freedom can obtain the complete mercy of the Lord. And the next verse, actually two verses from there, is one who is not connected with the Supreme in Krishna consciousness can have neither a transcendental intelligence nor a steady mind. Without there is no possibility of peace, and how can there be any happiness without peace? So, the whole point is to learn how to restrain the senses, as mentioned here in the verse, tapo divyam putraka yena sattvam. And actually, that's an interesting verse from the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, in which Lord Vishavadeva is instructing his sons. He actually has 100 sons, quite a few. And he says, nayam deho vajam, nayam deho vajam niloke, kastam kamam arhate vidbhujam ye, tapo divyam putraka yena sattvam, chudyat yasmad brahma shoka vanantam. That's the whole verse. He says, nayam deho, you've taken this a rare birth, nayam deho, deham vajam, this human birth, my dear sons, you shouldn't try to enjoy like the, he basically says, stool eaters. Stool eater means pig, in case you haven't discovered or figured what that means. Nayam deyo deyo vajam niloke kastam kamam arte vidbhujam ye. That's a stool eater. Tapo divyam yene. So you should engage in transcendental austerity. In other words, austerity means to not do things you might like to do and to do things that you may not like to do. Or not do things that you like to do and to do things that you wouldn't like to do. What does that mean? Like rising early in the morning, all these things like that. So how can one do those things and not be miserable? Actually, Prabhupada said about Gurukula that the children should be trained to enjoy austerity. Prabhupada was talking about things like cold showers and things like that. Not cold showers in the West. I don't think Prabhupada was referring to cold showers in the Western world in the middle of the winter. Although in the Krishna conscious movement, we used to do that. I remember New York Temple, when we had the 55th Street Temple, the devotees couldn't afford heating or hot water. So turning on the water in the middle of the winter, it was like having needles piercing your back. So that's a little too much austerity. But, you know, Prabhupada said the children should enjoy the austerity, not that you force the children to take showers. So how do you enjoy austerity? That's the question. That's a really big question. How do you enjoy waking up at 4 o'clock in the morning? How do you enjoy sitting down and chanting japa? How do you enjoy sitting for Bhagavatam class? How do you enjoy going on Sankirtan? How do you enjoy cleaning the pots in Krishna's kitchen? So one time I had to clean pots for Purva. That was the biggest challenge I've ever had in my life. Because everything was all over the place. He's a spontaneous Raghunuga cook. Anyway, so how do you enjoy all these things? Well, got to get your happiness within. Because the happiness is not going to come when you simply meditate on what you're doing externally, because you're going to think, I am an educated person. I have a university degree. What the hell am I doing cleaning Krishna's pots? What the hell? Sorry for the French. What the heck? Sorry. Restrain myself. What the heck am I doing? Cleaning the floor, cleaning the toilets. I mean, I remember the first time I joined the movement. They said, here's the, they didn't even call it a bathroom, they called it the stool room. That's like an ISKCON nomenclature, isn't it? For the bathroom. Can you clean the stool room? I mean, it's really, it becomes more austerity when you actually express it like that. If you just said the bathroom, it's, you know, the bathroom, okay. Mm-hmm. The stool room. So, it's so visual, you know, that the expression, isn't it? So, can you clean the stool? So, and I went in there and I enjoyed it. And it's not that I'm a masochist either, or like dirty things. But you enjoy things by developing your internal life. See, that's really the purpose of the austerities. To free you from the addiction to your external senses. Because we're actually addicted. As strange as that may seem, just like one is addicted to taking alcohol, one is addicted to drinking coffee even. Like my mother was addicted, or still is, to drinking coffee. I never wanted to talk to her in the morning until she had her cup of Joe. That's a fancy word, a new word for coffee. Did you know that? Morning Joe. So we're addicted to so many things. And these addictions, they take away our freedom. I mean, actually, we have a big need for autonomy, for freedom, for choosing things. And when you're addicted, you're forced to act in different ways. Of course, that's the statement of the Bhagavad Gita. Everyone is forced to act helplessly according to the impulses born of the modes of nature. No one can refrain from action even for a moment. Straight Bhagavad Gita. So one has to conquer those addictions. And the way to conquer those addictions is not simply just to go attend, you know, AAA meetings, although that may help, or go to, you know, whatever meanings, you know, Coffee Anonymous, or what other thing, you know, Drugs Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous, all these anonymous meanings. The way to do that is to actually identify yourself with your real nature and enjoy happiness within. And the way you enjoy happiness within is you practice with sadhana, and the way of practicing is you practice with your subtle body. Not just your gross body. We've talked about this many times. I gave a seminar about this in Serbia this summer. That sometimes we practice Krishna consciousness with our gross body, but our mind is somewhere else. And Prabhupada said, and the Vedic literature say, that you are where your mind is. Like right now, if I start thinking of Hawaii, because Mother Krishna Priya will relate to this, with the fruits and the breeze, and I was swimming with one of my godbrothers, Sri Takirti, a few months ago, and it was just like paradise, then that's where I am. Even if I'm giving Bhagavatam class, you know, somehow I can give Bhagavatam class, putting myself on automatic pilot. And then where I am, where I'm thinking of, whatever I'm thinking of, that's where I am. You travel at the speed of the mind, which is faster than the speed of light. So, oftentimes we're doing, or most often, we're doing our sadhana, or practice, or chanting, which is part of sadhana, without being conscious of what we're doing. We do it ritualistically. And that's another problem, according to Rupa Goswami, Achahara, Prayasacha, Pujapa, Niyamagraha. Right? Niyamagraha means you're doing things externally, but not internally. So you're not getting detachment, you're not getting a higher taste, and you're not getting renounced from, or conquering the addictions of this world. So whatever you do, you should be doing it with your subtle body at the same time you're doing it externally. What does that mean? That means when you're chanting such a simple thing as the pranam mantras for your spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, you should be thinking of the meaning of it. It's not just a ritual. When you're putting on tilak, it's not war paint. You understand war paint? Like before the American Indians went to war, or the islanders in the Pacific or whatever, they went to war, they put this paint and they dress up. And I go to Fiji and I see this quite often. They don't go to war, but they're just putting on an act for the tourists. You know, there's tourists there, and the tourists want to see them do all these fancy dances, and that's what they get paid for. So, you know, we're putting on tilak. What is this? It's kavacha. You know, we're protecting the body. Not only are we marking the body as a temple of God, you know, Keshavaya, Namana Narayana, Madhavaya, Govindaya, Vishnavaya, etc. But we're actually protecting the body. When we're praying to Lord Nrisingadeva in the morning, Namaste Narasimhaya, then we're praying for protection for the movement, protection for the spiritual master, protection for the devotees. So one has to be thinking of the meaning of what you're doing, and also not only the meaning of what you're doing, but why you're doing it. Two things. You know, what and why. While you're doing it, while you're chanting the Maha Mantra, it's Radha Krishna. And then life becomes so pleasing that, and internal, this is the practice, this is the austerity, that even if externally you have to do things that are just going against the grain, then you don't even notice it. That's how we become detached. That's the higher taste. That's some paramjastanivartante. And that we can achieve now, even in the beginning stages of sadhana bhakti. And then we won't be greedy for more and more things. Then we can control the tongue, then we control all the senses. That is Krishna consciousness. So if we take this up seriously, then we can become happy. And really, that's the point. The point is to become happy. So, and actually another point is Krishna says, in order to become happy, you need peace. And then in the fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, it states the formula for peace to understand that Krishna is the enjoyer. Bhaktaram jagatapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram. Suradam sarvabhutam yadvamam shanti mrichate. Understand Krishna is the enjoyer, he's your friend, he's taking care of you, he's protecting you, he's maintaining you. I know we talked about this in previous classes. So there's no reason for anxiety. Then you're not lamenting. Then you're not hankering. Brahmabhuta prasanatma janshokshati nakhankshati samak sarveshu bhuteshu madbhakti lavate param. It's very easy. Krishna consciousness is very easy. Just be absorbed internally. And then every moment becomes ecstatic. You're eating prasadam, because that's always ecstatic. But then even offering obeisances becomes, wow, I get to offer obeisances. Offer my respects unto His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, so dear to Lord Krishna, having taken shelter of the Lord's lotus feet. Offer my obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, who is carrying out Lord Chaitanya's mission in these Western worlds, which is so full of impersonalism and voidism, nirvishesha shunyavadi paschatutation type, then you're really connected. When you're offering food, I mean, just like when I offer to my Shilas, I think, you know, besides Prabhupada's pranam mantras, then there's Namo Mahava Nanyaya Krishna Prabhupada. I think, oh my dear Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you're the most magnificent. Pretty wonderful when you think like that, isn't it? Or Namo Brahmanya Devaya. Oh Krishna, you're the Lord of the Brahmanas. You're favorable to the Brahmanas. Go, and the cows, of course. Go Brahmanaya Tayacha, merciful. Jagadithaya Krishnaya Govindaya Namo Namaha. Then really austerity becomes blissful. So, any questions about these points? Yes.
What is the role that association and environment play in trying to perform a life or trying to live a life which is in itself filled with hysteria?
Association, of course, is very important. I mean, bhakti comes from the pure devotees. Krishna himself doesn't give bhakti. So it's important to have that association. But association means you've got to take that association. You have to hear Shushu Shro Shadana Anasha Vasudevita Vijisha Mahasavyavipra. You have to Punyatyakunashavya. One has to hear with faith from the pure devotees, and that's association. When one has that association, and we do have that association, whether we're taking it or not, that's another thing. One can have that association from books. One can have that association from MP3s, although Prabhupada never mentioned MP3s. They didn't have MP3s at that time. I know that, you know, there was some propaganda a number of years ago that association has to be physical. But that really goes against what Prabhupada said. And they said, well, you can't, it's not the same thing to hear a mantra from a tape, because in those days it was tapes, as to hear from the spiritual master or hear from someone who is physically present. Where does it say that? Because if you hear from someone who's physically present, it's also coming through a mechanism. What is that mechanism? Yantra. Yantra, Rudani Maya. The body is a machine. So whether I use, let's say, if I was a devotee, which would be a stretch of the imagination, but let's say if I was a devotee, And I used a tape recorder, I dated myself. If I use my an MP3 to give this class, or let's say someone's watching on Facebook Live, and there are a few people watching, or you're sitting here, who's getting more benefit? I mean, how can someone say that someone watching Facebook Live is getting less benefit from someone who's sitting in class? It's the sound vibration. It's coming through a mechanism anyway. It's coming through my voice, which is a mechanism, and the amplifier, which is another mechanism. And it's coming through from your ear. You're hearing through your ear, which is another mechanism. You know, the ear, there's an eardrum, and that bounces around. And right now, some of you may have tinnitus from using your eardrum too much. Where is it stated? Prabhupada many times gave second initiation to people with a tape. Did Prabhupada say it was less effective? Where is that said? Where is someone getting that information that's less effective? Things have to be based on Shastra. And Prabhupada based his instructions on Shastra. And Prabhupada said, you read the books, you become a devotee. Prabhupada's present in his books.
If someone listens to Prabhupada chanting Gayatri, is that...
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, sometimes to not initiate myself, but sometimes to reinvigorate myself, I'll listen to Prabhupada's Gayatri mantra. But it's not that someone could take initiation. Initiation means that that there's a process. But Prabhupada's just as present today. He reasons ill, who says that Vaishnavas die. This is what Bhaktivinoda Thakur said. When thou art living still and sound. Right? I think that people can connect to Prabhupada, and I'm not talking about the Ritvic philosophy, but people can connect to Prabhupada just as much today as they could, you know, 30 years ago. I don't think that there's any disconnect because Prabhupada is not physically present in his body.
But I think that's what the Ritviks are saying.
Yeah, well, I don't disagree with all the Ritviks, everything the Ritviks say. A lot of things they say is true. But they can't take initiation because that's a process that's Shastra.